This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Keller, Ovechkin, Keller spins. Ovechkin fires and he couldn't get a good shot off. He was tied up. He's pleading for a call, but nothing doing. Estomy in, shoots, scores! Max Domi puts the Montreal Canadiens ahead with 21 seconds remaining in the hockey game.
The electrifying Max Domi, certainly fitting in well with the Montreal Canadiens organization. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mundell, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio on this Saturday morning. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. And of course, our website, it has the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio, is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
As we do every month, we're pleased to welcome to the program Cam Robinson from Dauber Hockey. Talk a little bit about the fantasy hockey world of things. Cam, good morning. Always appreciate you joining us.
Good morning, boys. How are you?
Doing very well, Cam. How about yourself?
Yeah, doing well, thanks.
That's good. Obviously, we intro'd the segment with that clip of Max Domi. He's on fire. I don't think anybody in the Canadiens expected this kind of performance since the off-season trade that saw Alex Galchenyuk going to Arizona. Domi riding an 8-game point streak, 12 points in those 8 games. Even if Domi doesn't keep up this pace, and it's unlikely that he's going to keep up this good of a pace, are you still starting him every week, week in, week out, in all fantasy formats?
Yeah, you're rolling him while he's hot. This is one of those things where, you know, he's always been a highly skilled player, and coming out junior, he had that pedigree. So he knows how to find the back of the net. He knows how to set up teammates and find the score sheet, and he's on a heater right now. So you absolutely ride him for sure. But like you said, he's not a 100-point player, as his pace suggests right now. His shooting percentage is high, so that's going to come back down by a lot at some point here. He's getting lucky. He's got the high PDO. But some things I like, he's getting a good amount of first assists, you know, so he's driving the play that way, seeing a ton of power play opportunities. And it's easy to forget that he had a nice stretch to finish out the season with Arizona as well. So, you know, I did the math there. He's got 41 points in his last 40 games leading back to last season. So, you know, that's a nice sample size for a player like this. And, you know, this is a guy that could be putting up 70, 75 points at the end of the year for sure.
Cam, Edmonton Oilers big man Leon Draisaitl, he's back on that top line with Connor McDavid, obviously on the wing. How do you see this improving his fantasy value? I guess, you know, I might have already answered my question. He had, you know, 3 points the other night against the Habs.
Yeah, it's massive for him. So that's always been kind of their nuclear option when the Oilers were down late. They put Draisaitl and McDavid together. They're usually a pair together in overtime, and it's just deadly. So getting prolonged 5-on-5 time with McDavid for Draisaitl is just huge. It puts him in a position where he could be a 90-point player versus off that line. He's more of a 70-point player. So, you know, you're seeing teams load up with these big, big top lines in Colorado and in Boston and in Dallas often. And for Edmonton, I mean, what do you have to lose? They're not doing so well, and it can give the fans something to get excited about. It can drive up the offense. So I'd be surprised if they moved him off that line anytime soon. And you know, even putting Ryan Nugent Hopkins up there and create something of their own super line sort of thing. So it's very, very big for Draisaitl owners.
You know, Cam, Panthers winger Evgeny Dadonov has 17 points in 16 games playing on the team's top line. Do you see Dadonov keeping up his points per game pace?
I mean, he can if he continues to live next to Sasha Barkov in all situations. So, you know, these guys literally play together every shift, which is huge for Dadonov. He had a great season last year stepping back into the league, put up over a 70-point pace. His shooting percentage, another one that's likely to regress, but it's not as far off as the other two guys there. He's doing a lot of damage at 5-on-5. Another guy that had a great stretch to finish last season. He's over a point a game in his last 60 sort of thing. So absolutely, as long as he's seeing that deployment, he's the real deal.
Cam Robinson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking a little bit about the fantasy side of the game. Cam is, of course, with Dauber Hockey, where you can find a lot of his great work. Cam, Alex Tuch has 11 points in 11 games for the Vegas Golden Knights since returning from injury. Missed the first eight games of the season with a lower body injury. Is he a player you're starting in daily and weekly pools right now?
You're doing it while he's on this heater, for sure. So, you know, he's got 6 points in the last 4 games, and he's got sustainable metrics, so his shooting conversion rate is right where it should be. He's up on, you know, kind of the quote-unquote power play one unit there. Vegas has been splitting their unit of late now, but he's seen a slightly bit more time on the Marchessault unit. He's a player that I've liked a lot, and I was surprised to see Minnesota give him up so early in the expansion draft just to save Jonas Brodin. But he's a player, and he's young, and he's got big upside, and he kind of plays a power forward game. So if you're in a multi-category league, he has some upside there as well. But he's a good pick, especially playing on that second line across from Pacioretty and getting that top power play.
Cam, earlier this week, the Pittsburgh Penguins and the LA Kings made that one-for-one move. Carl Hagelin going to the Kings, Tanner Pearson going to the Penguins. Obviously, both players have not had good offensive starts to the year. Would you consider picking Pearson up off of the waiver wire, and do you think he can come anywhere close to regaining that former form of a couple of years ago when he scored 24 goals?
I mean, it's interesting. When a player gets traded, one of two things can happen. It can be really difficult on them, and their production can wane. It's going to be hard for his to wane much more. He's got 1 point in 18 games. Or, you know, the adrenaline kind of gets pumping, and they go on a bit of a run for a few games. So you could take a chance on him, especially if he's going to play with Malkin at even strength, which it looks like he's going to see a little bit of time with to start with. He'll never get on that top power play unit. When everyone's healthy, Jake Guentzel can't get on that top unit. So you got to have muted expectations a little bit. But, you know, he's one of these guys that best case, he can regain his form and be a 45, 50-point player. Worst case, you're looking at, you know, a 25, 30-point guy. So if you have unlimited moves and you want to take a swing on a guy and see if he can get hot for a couple games, then I got no problem with that.
Cam, New York Rangers defenseman Neil Pionk has quietly put up good defensive numbers so far this season. He has 12 points in 17 games. Are you bullish on Pionk in certain leagues that require you to start a certain number of defensemen?
It's funny. He's one of these guys that I've just been waiting for the rug to get pulled out, you know, for the production to fall off a cliff, and it just hasn't happened yet. So he's been playing on that top power play unit ahead of Kevin Shattenkirk, which has been much talked about in New York City there. But as long as he's in that spot, he's definitely rosterable, and his production is very strong. He's a bit streaky, so, you know, he's had a couple of four-game droughts, and then he has 12 points in the other nine games. So when he's on, he's really, really on. Defense is a shallow position, and if you have to start four or five or six even, then he's absolutely one of these guys you want in your lineup until, you know, he gets knocked off that top unit or the production dries up.
Cam Robinson of Dauber Hockey is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. We're talking about the fantasy side of the game like we do with Cam each and every month. You know, Cam, a player who I think people had tremendously high expectations for is Erik Karlsson. He's only got 10 assists, no goals, in 20 games with the San Jose Sharks. Now, usually there's a bit of an adjustment period for a player coming over from, you know, a new team, but how concerned would you be if you're a Karlsson owner over his performance so far this season?
Yeah, it is a little concerning. Like you said, it's only been, you know, 20 games or so. So you definitely, he's earned a lot longer leash than that. But it's disappointing. So obviously he has no goals. So the shooting percentage is due to come up for sure. He's not shooting the puck a ton, less than three shots a game. He's just not looking his normal dynamic self all the time. He's still showing the flashes of it. His skating isn't as elite as it once was after maybe that ankle injury. But he's a player that, you know, I don't think it would surprise anybody if he went off and put 20 points up in the next 20 games and kind of right the ship a little bit there. So he's a guy that I got a lot of patience for. But, you know, at this point, Brent Burns is eating up all the good point production, and that probably isn't going to change anytime soon. But he's a guy that's still in that top three or five fantasy D category.
Cam, the Nashville Predators announced earlier this week that Victor Arvidsson was going to be out for 6 to 8 weeks, and obviously he skates usually on the top line with Philip Forsberg and Ryan Johansson. Peter Laviolette had Colton Sissons up on that top line, but recently Kevin Fiala has been skating on that team's top line. Do you expect Fiala to stick on that top line, and would you expect a boost in his offensive production just based on the fact that he's playing with Forsberg and Johansson, two great offensive players?
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. So the deployment is key in fantasy, and so if he's skating on that big line, that's going to be big for him. So he had the slow start, and I know many fantasy owners were hovering above that drop button if they didn't already click it. And he's woken up a little bit of late, and now getting this chance to stick on that line, and Arvidsson's out for a couple months, so he should have a good long opportunity as long as he makes good on it. So he's a player I'd definitely take a swing on if he's available on the wire, or if you can get him cheap in a trade just to see if he can strike gold.
Cam, who are a couple of players, maybe two or three, whose fantasy stock is rising? And conversely, who are a couple of players whose fantasy stock is dropping?
Yeah, so I've got a couple here. Just to, it's hard to mention hot and cold guys without mentioning Blake Wheeler. I'm sure you guys have been talking about him all morning, or you know, most weekends here. 20 points over the last 11 games or so, or 12 games there. So this is a guy that you ride him all the way. Matt Duchene is rolling. You know, he's got 9 points in 5 games. He's one of these guys, though, if you got an opportunity, he's had a great start to the season. He's a UFA at the end of the year, so he's got a lot of motivation to put up some big numbers. But if you can sell high on him, I would. He kind of maybe has a little stink after a couple years of not doing so well, so that might not be an option. Mikko Koivu, another guy, really doing well lately. He's one of these guys, too, that I'd ride it or sell it if I could. And another one is Jeff Skinner. So he had a bit of a slow start, too, and now he's just been out of his mind. 20-plus points in 14 games. Playing with Jack Eichel, looking very comfortable in that top power play unit. A couple of guys that are kind of running some cold streaks. Elias Pettersson, so pointless in 4 straight, but it's been a tough road trip for them. They're an injured team. He's missing Brock Besser. I think you need to be aware that even despite all the aggressive comparisons and the hype early on this year, that rookies will go through lulls, especially ones playing on poor teams, but he'll be back putting up points here soon. And then one more is Nick Schmaltz. So he's got 1.9 games. He had been centering Patrick Kane a lot last season and to start this year. They got the new coach in there. He's up playing left wing with Taves and Kane, and he's playing on the top power play unit. So he's one of these guys that it's been icy cold, but I'd expect a rebound soon.
Now, Cam, this is more of a personal question because I have him in our hockey pool, but when is Max Pacioretty going to start to light the lamp?
I'm not sure he's going to. So I've been asked that a few times that he doesn't really have a center with Stasny being out and Holla being out. So he's lacking kind of that distributing center form to really lock in with. You know, could he get 25 goals this year still? Yeah, probably. But he's at this age where power forwards kind of have a steeper decline quicker. So he's not someone I'd be buying on. And if he does go on a little quick run there, it might be an opportunity to sell him.
So I guess you're saying, Cam, that was a bad pick. A bad pick on my part.
Depends on when you picked him, I guess. Yeah. But yeah, you take a chance later on, and that's not so bad. But hopefully you didn't grab him in the third round.
He probably did. Anyways, Cam Robinson joins us from Dauber Hockey to talk about the fantasy side of the game. Cam, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for doing it. We'll do it again next month, buddy.
Sounds good, boys. We'll talk soon.
Take care. Thanks very much. Cam Robinson of Dauber Hockey joining us. When we come back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, we're going to discuss Milan Lucic. It really is a struggle for him with the Oilers. Should the Oilers buy his contract out in the offseason? That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are For the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I feel like there's still a lot to prove in my career. I mean, I turned 30 in June, and sometimes, you know, I remember when in my first 3-4 years in the league, you think of someone who turns 30, you're like, oh, that's old. But now that you're here, you don't feel old, that's for sure. So there's definitely motivation, you know, from a personal level, but also I think more so from a team level.
That was from training camp. Milan Lucic of the Edmonton Oilers talking about his upcoming season. He says he had a lot to prove after last year's doldrums. Well, he certainly hasn't proven it yet this season as those doldrums continue. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the program brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Milan Lucic, in the midst of a $6 million per season contract for the next 5 years, including this year, the production has not been very good. He's got a goal and 4 assists in 18 games this year. The struggles continue for Milan Lucic. An interesting article in TheAthletic.com this week by Tyler Dello stating that the Oilers would be better off buying out Milan Lucic out of that contract at season's end. Ezzy, do you agree, disagree, or do you think that there's still hope for Milan Lucic to regain the 20-goal form that we've seen for so many seasons beforehand?
You know, this article came out in The Athletic a couple of days ago,
yeah.
And, you know, I think Ty Dello makes a lot of good points here. And, you know, he mentions this in the lead of the story. In the last 73 games, Lucic has 2 even strength goals and 10 even strength assists. And this is a guy who's got a lot of time on the second line. I mean, it's not like he's playing on the fourth line or the third line. He's been on that second line. And you mentioned, Drew, he's only got one goal. And you mentioned that he's a $6 million a year player, mm-hmm. but he's got 4 years after this year. 4 more years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that contract looks horrible right now because Lucic is not the 20 to 25 goal, 50 to 60 point guy. He's the 10 to 12 goal guy, 30 to 40 point guy. Yeah. And I mean, that's just not good enough when you're making $6 million a year. Now, Lucic, I realize, has always been kind of the villain in the NHL, especially since, you know, the Bruins won the Cup back in 2011.
Big physical power forward, yes. Aggressive, well, mean to play against.
He's mean. He's mean, and he's dangerous. And, you know, Lucic, you know, he obviously got into some trouble going after Matthew Joseph of the Tampa Bay Lightning, mm-hmm. you know, protecting Chris Russell, protecting his players.
That was the most significant on-ice contribution this season.
But that's what he's got to do, and, you know, I realize, you know, there's the whole Dave Semenko angle there. Obviously, you know, Dave Semenko used to protect Wayne Gretzky. Milan Lucic, obviously, you know, is out there to protect Connor McDavid, even though he doesn't play on the same line. But the point is, when they brought him in, Dave, and they signed him to this big contract, they didn't expect this type of production. I mean, they expected Lucic to have more than one goal in 17 games. So when you're talking about whether or not the Oilers should buy him out, mm-hmm. I mean, think about what they could do with this extra amount of money. For me, the biggest problem with the Oilers right now is they don't have a number one defenseman. I mean, who's their number one defenseman? Is it Oscar Klefbom? Is it Adam Larson? I mean, I would argue Darnell Nurse is their best defenseman. And I don't know if you would say that Darnell Nurse is your... What I mean by number one defenseman is an elite defenseman. Sure. Like Josh Morrissey, Jacob Trouba, these are elite defensemen.
Dustin Byfuglien. Yeah.
Dustin Byfuglien. You know, Drew Doughty. I mean, Victor Hedman, Brent Burns, Erik Karlsson. I mean, I just don't think that defense, Dave, for the Oilers, as it's currently constructed, is good enough to go anywhere in the playoffs. Sure, the Oilers might squeak in there because that Pacific division is horrible. But what I'm saying is, when you have Lucic making $6 million for 4 more years, it's not 1 more year, it's not 2 more years, 4 more years, and, you know, I hate to, you know, beat a dead horse here, but it's a really bad contract, and it's nothing against Lucic personally. It's that he's in the upper echelon of contracts, and his production just doesn't match the amount of money he's making. So when you're talking about this Oilers team that wants to win now, they don't want to win tomorrow, they need to get back into the playoffs, and obviously they're not going to buy him out now, they're going to buy him out in the summer. I think for Peter Chiarelli, it has to be something that he's strongly considering, Drew.
Dave?
And well, we talked about, I feel like we're, like if we flash back to our summer show when we were talking about previewing the season and we were looking at the Oilers and the biggest vulnerabilities of Edmonton, and we were talking about that defense and the defense, of course. So Ezzie's point, I think, is well made. I think that's an area this team really needs to improve on. And, you know, again, it's not something they've done recently.
Here's the numbers. So Ty Dellos went back to 1995. So over the last 23 years, there have been 155 forwards who have had at least a 73-game run with only between 10 and 15 even strength points. So in the last 23 years, there's been 155 forwards who've played 73 games with between 10 and 15 points. Of those 155 forwards, only 29 players even made it to their age 31 season. So you're talking about the majority of guys who've been on a stretch like Milan Lucic, who have been out of the NHL by the time they hit 31. Now he's got this contract, so even, you know, if they buy him out, somebody's probably going to take a flyer on him at a very low price. But that just tells you how bad this contract is and how bad his performance is, that the majority of guys who've been on a stretch like he has don't even make it into their early 30s and continue to be NHL caliber players.
Right. And, I mean, is he wrong? I mean, the numbers prove it,
yeah.
Right? I mean, Lucic's best offensive numbers are most likely behind him. Now, I'm not saying that he can't still score 15 to 20 goals at the NHL level. But, I mean, if that's the ceiling for a guy that you're paying $6 million a year that's getting, you know, second line ice time, I mean, you need more out of that. They were expecting Lucic, guys, to be that 50 to 60 point power forward, and he's nowhere close to that.
He's on pace for about 23 points this season.
Well, sure, and you know, last year.
And he only had 34 last year. So, I mean, a drop off from 34.
Well, last year he went, 3 months without a goal?
But do you see any reason to think he's going to get to 10 goals this year, aside from, you know, maybe his numbers, you know, improve just based on historical precedent?
Right.
I mean, this is a guy who's probably tapping out now at 10 goals a season at $6 million per season. So from my perspective, I mean, the money that the Oilers would be saving if they were to buy him out is significant enough that you have to do it. Instead of a cap hit of $6 million a season, he'd make 3.625 next year, 3.625 the year after, 4.1, 5.6, and then 625,000 for another 4 seasons after that.
That contract is just gross.
It's probably the worst contract in the NHL when you're talking about buying out a guy, you know, while still paying him, you know, close to $4 million a year on average. And it's not like the Oilers aren't up against the salary cap. They have salary cap troubles as well.
That's what, paying a guy over $20 million to no longer play for your organization.
Yeah, you pay him two-thirds of the remaining contract. I mean, sometimes a contract goes bad in the last year or the last 2 years of a contract when it's a long-term contract for a guy who's in his late 20s, early 30s. But you don't often see a contract go bad in the first year or the first 2 years of a seven-year contract.
Right. And Ty Dello mentions in the article about the compliance buyout. And if I'm not mistaken, the compliance buyout, it doesn't count at all against your cap.
That's only if they have compliance buyouts. Well, they didn't have compliance buyouts in the last CBA.
Right.
I mean, hoping for a lockout to get out of a bad contract seems like a poor way of running your team.
And the Oilers drew, and Dello mentions this in the article for The Athletic, and you know, maybe we'll send out a link on either the IC Twitter account, or maybe, Drew, you can send it on your personal account. But basically, he says that the earliest that it can happen is the year after next year. So the Oilers would have to hold on to him for at least one more year and wait for the new CBA to even have the chance to get that compliance buyout. So that seems very unlikely. So, I mean, there is a strong chance that Lucic is bought out next summer. Again, and this has nothing to do with him personally. It just has to do with the fact that he just hasn't fulfilled, you know,
he's a fourth line. He's performing at a fourth line NHL rate and not a good fourth line rate at that.
He's making too much money and he's taking up a spot that could be given to another player. And you also have to factor in, too, guys like Jesse Puljujarvi, Kyler Yamamoto, you know, both first-round picks of the Oilers. I mean, those guys are going to eventually come off their entry-level deals. They're going to be making more money. And plus,
Not with the performance they put up
so far. And it goes back to what I said before. I realize, you know, the Oilers made that, you know, move Ryan Strome for Ryan Spooner. I mean, that's a depth move.
That's rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Well, and you have to, you know, it's a good point. And Peter Chiarelli, you have to think, has a bigger move in play here. Coming.
I don't know what that bigger move would be, though.
But it's to bring in a defenseman. That, to me, that's the glaring weakness. The goaltending's been better, and Koskinen, I think, has solidified that backup spot. You know, Talbot, I'm not saying he's the best goalie in the world, but I think he's shown signs of getting back to his former self. I think you have to bolster that defense
in the forward group, Ezzy. Besides McDavid and Dreisaitl, and I guess Nugent Hopkins, but you need Nugent Hopkins. Who's got any value? I mean, Jesse Puljujarvi's value is at its absolute lowest right now because he can't crack the lineup here for whatever reason.
He's fighting in the AHL right now.
Like, he's actually getting into fights in the AHL?
Yeah, his first fight.
That seems like not the role you'd want him to be. That seems like a better role for Milan Lucic to be playing in the AHL than Jesse Puljujarvi. But, I mean, it's a poorly constructed roster.
The Tobias Reeder injury doesn't help either.
No, they have no... Tobias Reeder's actually been doing okay for the Oilers. Now he's out for a month, and this is a team with poor depth on the wings.
The biggest factor right now is that if you're the Edmonton Oilers, you know that Connor McDavid's time to win is opening up right now. This is what everybody says. They say this is the point in a guy's career when his window for that chance, because you're really getting the best out of Connor McDavid in the next probably 3 years for Edmonton. But one man doesn't make a team, and one man can't win you a championship as good as he is and being the best player in the NHL. So the fact of the matter is you have to surround him with a cast. You know, like Sidney Crosby for the longest time was the best player, but he needed a cast around him to really solidify that and to give him that opportunity to win the Stanley Cup. Connor McDavid similarly needs that cast around him, and right now Edmonton hasn't provided him.
You know,
that.
Speaking of Cy Young candidates, former UND standout Drake Caggiula, he's 6-0.
Six goals, zero assists.
Yep.
Well, I mean, that's not good.
And Kajula, I would argue, after McDavid, Dreisaitl, and Nugent Hopkins,
is the best forward.
I would say he's probably been their best forward.
Yeah.
And, you know, Alex Chiasson is a nice story. He was signed after playing for Washington last year after winning a cup. But, yeah, no, they're not getting secondary offense, and it goes back.
Alex Chiasson's on his, what, fifth NHL team? Well, he came in with Dallas, went to Ottawa, Calgary, Washington,
right.
Edmonton.
I mean, he's
not the answer.
Well, no, he's not the answer, but, I mean, considering that, you know, what they're paying him, he's got six goals. I think he's fourth on the team in goals.
Which, you're right. I mean, nothing to take away from Alex Chiasson, and if he is in their fourth line, then it's great value. This is a poorly constructed roster. I don't know how they...
It's a huge game tonight between the Oilers and Flames, because the Flames lost their last game against the Habs, a game in which they were leading and they should have won. But
they lost 3-2, yeah.
Yeah. The Oilers need this game.
Oilers coming off a 6-2 victory over the Habs. I mean, fortunately for the Oilers, they're playing in the Pacific Division, which is clearly the worst division in hockey right now, so that's why they're only 2 points out of a playoff spot. But, my God, they're just... That roster construction is horrendous, and that's, you know...
Well, you go back to the summer, Drew.
Yeah.
Peter Chiarelli was not active.
Nope.
I mean, his big moves were bringing in Kyle Brodziak, Tobias Reeder, and Kevin Gravel.
Mm-hmm.
And I might be forgetting one or two other moves, but they were minor moves.
And it's clearly shown that they weren't the right moves necessarily. When we return, the Jets are into Vancouver on Monday to face the Canucks for the first time in Vancouver this season. Patrick Johnston of Post Media, he covers the Canucks. He's going to join us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final hour coming up next on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. This hour of the program is brought to you by the HSC Millionaire Lottery. The absolute final deadline in the HSC Millionaire Lottery is midnight on Wednesday. Head to HSCMillionaire.com right now for your last chance at one of six grand prizes, including luxury homes, cash, cars, and more. Or take the all-cash payout of $1.1 million.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program from Post Media. He covers the Vancouver Canucks. He's our good friend, Patrick Johnston. Patrick, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Gentlemen, good to be back.
And it's good to have you back, Patrick. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Canucks. The Jets going to be making their first visit on the season into Vancouver on Monday night to face a Canucks team that's currently in a playoff spot in the Pacific Division. Some of the underlying numbers aren't great, a minus 10 goal differential, but right now through 21 games, if you told most Canucks fans that they'd be in a playoff spot, they would probably take that no matter what the underlying numbers might say.
Oh, 100%. I mean, the way the season's gone and you know, the fact that, yeah, exactly, that you know, the general rule, you want to get more shots than the other team, and that hasn't been a trend that's been in their favor. The results, I mean, they haven't been lucky in a lot of respects, but, they take the start, get, you know, what, 14 of their first 21 games on the road, most games played of any team in the NHL. They're sitting pretty happy, even though it hasn't been a very good week.
Patrick, I wanted to ask you about Jake Virtanen. He's got three goals here in his last five games, and I believe he's got five goals in his last eight games, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, he's a player. The year that the Jets drafted Nikolaj Ehlers in the first round, I believe it was ninth overall, the Canucks took Virtanen sixth overall. And, you know, the talk, I know, in Vancouver has always been, you know, is Virtanen ever going to live up to being a sixth overall pick? But he's really started to pick up his goal scoring. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And he's shown, I think, with just the fact that he's scoring, that, you know, he's been a useful NHL player since he entered the league as a you know, raw rookie in 2015. And you know, he's always had a scoring touch. He was a good goal scorer in the WHL. That was why they picked him. They liked his size, big guy, good skater. One of the challenges for him had been essentially finding ways to get on the puck more in better scoring spots. His, you know, you look at his highlight packages from junior, and most of his goals were goals where he managed to separate himself from the defense, you know, whether it be on a breakaway or a down low play, a lot of shots off the wing. He's got a good shot, But you get to the NHL, and those things don't work. They don't happen. You know, he had to find a way to become a more effective offensive player. There was no doubt that he was a good two-way player. The numbers have always laid that out, that you know, when he's on the ice, the Canucks are at the offensive end of the ice. But he has been a struggle for him to find himself closer to the net. And partly because that's never been his instinct, because he never had to. And I would say, you know, we look at a number of the goals. I mean, his most recent goal was a greasy rebound goal in the slot on the power play, a position that he has never instinctually maybe gone to, but is being pushed to go to more. And he's getting results. And it's a nice turn of events for the team, a team that struggled to score last year. You know, he, like I said, a guy who's got the scoring talent. And so to get goals from him has been a big thing for this team.
You know, Patrick, everybody was focused on the Canucks being an up-and-coming young team, and, you know, you have to look sometimes to the farm club, of course, and Olli Juhalevi is certainly setting the AHL on fire. One goal, 12 assists, 13 points, leads rookie defenseman in the AHL in scoring. How much excitement is there in Vancouver right now for the way he's progressing in the AHL?
I think it's one of those ones that, at least as far as the narrative goes, it's been an important step for him. He's always obviously been playing away from the spotlight in Vancouver. Played last year in Finland, this year now in the AHL, and you know, you don't see him on the highlight packages very much, but the fact that he's now producing in the AHL, I think, is sort of giving fans sort of, you know, signs of progress. I think there were concerns that maybe the fact that he was in and out of the lineup to start with last year in Finland, he played a lot more as the season went along and was a you know, obviously a key player for them in the World Juniors. I think it helps push his story forward. At the same time, you know, I think people are like, well, why isn't he in the NHL yet? He's, I believe, if not the only one of only two players from the top 10 in the draft that year who hasn't played in the NHL yet. And that is sort of, I think, sort of cause for, you know, eyebrow raising, I suppose, for fans here. But he seems to be on the right path. He seems to be progressing. I don't generally get to watch a lot of Utica games with the guys that I know that do are saying he's progressing well, and we can see that the points are deserved. And you know, he's gonna play some NHL games this year. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But the team's in no hurry, and I think the fans will be happy to see him when he gets here. And they'll want to see more of him, I'm sure, once they get a sense of what he's about.
Patrick, Louis Erickson has been a player that's been criticized the last 3 years, and he's off to a good start early on this year with 4 goals and 12 points in 21 games. He's playing on the team's second line there. In the absence of the Sedin twins, has he kind of taken over that elder statesman role for the team?
I think so. I mean, Louis, he's a quiet guy. Like, he's not, I mean, the Sedins were never rah-rah guys, but the Sedins were certainly always players that were happy to speak with the media. And you know, the players now often talk about the influence he had on their group in terms of just sort of setting the tone, in terms of always being ready to say the right thing. So, Erickson's not that kind of player, but there is no doubt he is aware of the fact that, you know, there's a young Swede on the team, Elias Pettersson, and Louis was once a young Swede in this league, and he knows a few things. And I think he has kind of taken on that role of kind of being the wise uncle, the guy who's, you know, not necessarily there to say things, but there to kind of show the way. It has been an interesting turn. It's kind of funny that you say he's had a good start. The perception was he was actually not having a good start because he hadn't scored. It took him, I believe, 11 or 12 games from to get his first goal on the year. And now he is scoring, which is, you know, obviously a thing that you want for a guy who's being paid, or whose average cap hit is $6 million a season. And that's why they signed him. But yeah, he's definitely picked things up. He's looking a lot better than he was in terms of results. He's always done a lot of good things away from the puck. But the results are finally starting to come, and certainly he's become less of a story because of the fact that he's actually getting some goals. But, you know, if that dries up again, that's going to be a talking point once again here.
Patrick Johnston is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Patrick covers the Vancouver Canucks for Post Media. The Jets into Vancouver on Monday night to face the Canucks. A game, of course, you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. The late start, the 9 o'clock puck drop, so make sure you have a lot of coffee during the course of the day. Patrick, Anders Nielsen has certainly been the best of the Canucks goaltenders stats-wise. Is it time for him to get more action? Markstrom leads in terms of 14 games played, but Nielsen has been the better of the two goalies in his six starts.
Yeah, he's got to get healthy first is kind of the key there. He broke a hand in practice a couple weeks ago, and he's working his way back to health. Richard Bachman sort of got the charity start on Thursday night in Minnesota. He didn't play that great, but then again, the team didn't play that great in front of him, which was a bit of a surprising call to start him there, given the team had back-to-back games in New York City. And, you know, it seemed like maybe the start should have been on Thursday. Jacob Markstrom has been a goalie that when, he slips into bad habits and when he plays too much and gets tired. And, you know, I mean, he's had some very good starts this year, but of late, there's been a lot of struggles, and they're not losing because of him, because there's a lot going on that's leading to the results that they've had of late. But Markstrom, yeah, I mean, if Nielsen were healthy and you know, we would probably have seen more of him, partly because he was playing well, as you noted. You know, he's played six games. He had a run of four straight starts on the first long road trip of the season. The Canucks have just come home from a six-game road trip, and they've just been on a six-game road trip to start the season. And on that first road trip, he kind of seized the bull by the horns. He got a start and then played so well that Travis Green couldn't help but go back to him, and he just kept playing well. And he's a big goalie. He's always showed potential. There was a good run of him, of starts from him to close out the season before he signed with the Canucks, which was last year. He played really well to finish the year in Buffalo, and in Vancouver he had a good start, and then his game kind of fell apart, and to the point where basically the coach didn't want to play him anymore in the second half last year. So he has been a big question mark, and the way he played in those early games is a huge credit to, I would say, to goalie coach Ian Clark, who just returned to the Canucks this year. He had been in Columbus for a number of years. But we'll see. I mean, goaltending is a problem. This is a team that I've given up the most goals in the league, and partly that's because of, sometimes how they play defensively, but also because of the fact they just haven't had good enough goaltending. If you're a team like the Canucks who, you know, have aspirations, I would say now, given how well their start was, that maybe they could be on, you know, a playoff team. If you're going to make the playoffs, you need better goaltending than they've been getting. And Markstrom has hit the wall. And if Nielsen can come back and seize the bull by the horns, you know, the opportunity is going to be there anyway.
Patrick, being a Winnipeg-based hockey show, we have to ask you about good friend of the show, Brendan Leipsic. He had a two-point night the other night against the Islanders. How's he looked so far this season?
You know, Leipsic, you know, we see what he is. You know, he's got some skills. He's a quick player. He likes to get on the puck. At this level, as we know with any player, it's about can you maintain that energy. And he's passed through, I believe this is now his fourth organization. And it's not because he's a bad guy. It's not because he's a terrible defensive hockey player or anything like that. He's been a player that you put him in the lineup. He's going to make some stuff happen. He's going to be a useful offensive player. But at the same time, it's that sort of what's your main calling card? And it's not clear that he has one. He's not an elite shooter. He's not an elite passer. Like I said, quick skater, a guy that could fill a depth role in your lineup. But especially in the early kind of first, you know, sort of 10, 12 games, I think he played one game. And that sort of speaks to where he's seen on the depth chart. I suspect he's going to see more ice time, partly because, as I said, the Canucks have kind of hit the wall a little bit in terms of how they've been producing, but also because, you know, the bottom six forwards have not been sort of the element that the Canucks really want them to be. Obviously the game now is so dynamic that you need something from every line, but the Canucks have been realistic looking at their lineup, and they've sort of said, listen, our Pettersson line, our Horvat line, those guys, we want them really to be getting every offensive opportunity that's possible, and the other two lines are going to have to pick up the slack defensively and probably have less offensive zone time and be focused on essentially preventing the other team from scoring. And Some of the story there, of course, is that they've lost Brandon Sutter, who has been a very smart, defensively oriented player for them, and that's been a factor. But it's just also been, they just haven't been able to kind of find the right mix in the bottom end, and he might be a guy that finds himself with an opportunity there, because as you said, he puts up points. I mean, they didn't win on Thursday night, but he got a couple points, and he scored some goals. He had a really nice finish to the season last year after they picked him up from Vegas. You know, he goes in the lineup and he shows well enough. I mean, in the end, it's tough when you're not playing a lot to get opportunity. And when you get the opportunity, sometimes you need a bit of luck. And I'd say he's a guy, as I said, that Canucks aren't unhappy with him, but they haven't exactly been jumping out of their seat to find a role for him either.
Patrick, after scoring 10 goals in his first 10 game, Elias Pettersson has no goals in his last five. What have you seen change in his game in the last few games?
I think some of it's just a bit of bad luck, to be perfectly honest. I mean, he's still getting shots. He's still getting time on the puck. Even late in the game on Thursday, he was pressing to score. And, you know, he more than anything, I think, has just also struggled a little bit with figuring out how to play in the NHL. You know, I mean, he had a great run. He really was kind of, I think, surprising a lot of people. They didn't know what he was going to be about, and now teams know what he's about. They've had a chance to scout him. You know, I mean, without a doubt, will have been seen by every team's pro scouting staff in the league now, and they have a sense of what he's about, and they can prepare for him better. And you know, we're seeing maybe a little less space. We're certainly seeing more defensemen being able to pick kind of smarter lines to give him a little more of a physical feeling to the opposition. I'd say, but he's still finding space. The goals are going to come, and I'd say that the side note on all that is the power play. The Canucks' first unit has really struggled lately, and partly that's to deal with the fact that Brock Besser's been out of the lineup, and he hasn't skated since he dropped out of the lineup 2 weeks ago. He's dealing with an adductor problem in his hip, and we're not sure when he's going to be back, and that's been a huge factor on the power play. And they're missing Sven Berchi, who's been out with a concussion and basically hasn't been able to train. He's been a key guy, or he was set to be a key guy in the power play. So, you know, Pettersson, it's a little bit, you know, there's a lot of pressure coming on him now, and he's going to be fine. I think it's, you know, this happens. He's a rookie, and he's going to adjust. And like I said, he's still getting lots of opportunities with the puck. It's just, maybe getting a bit of luck as well.
Patrick Johnston covers the Vancouver Canucks for Post Media on the West Coast. Patrick, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us, the Jets and the Canucks, Monday night in Vancouver.
Thanks, fellas.
Great. Take care, Patrick. Thanks again. When we come back, a couple trades this week in the NHL and a little bit of a peculiar contract extension. We'll talk about that all next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
It's an interesting move for the Penguins in a sense. They're getting a guy that has back-to-back 40-point seasons, a guy in Pearson who 2 years ago had 24 goals, obviously has more to give, but has lost his confidence this year with no goals in 17 games. And you can certainly understand it from the Kings' perspective. That team has scuffled.
Frank Saravelli breaking down one of the trades from earlier this week. Tanner Pearson to the Penguins, Carl Hagelin to the Los Angeles Kings. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, a special concert series event. Dan Soder in town. You've seen him on Billions, the great Showtime show. Two shows left. He's been here all week and he's doing a great job. 7:15, 10 p.m., very few tickets remaining. Get them now at rumorscomedyclub.com.
When's our boy Kevin Bozeman from Chicago coming back into town?
I'm not sure. Whenever he's back, we'll bring him back on air. We always enjoy having Kevin in studio with us.
Maybe do a little post-show bowling?
Yeah, we did that last time he was here. We went bowling. Introduced him to five-pin bowling for the first time, of course, that being a Canadian thing. So, you know, we'll get Kevin back whenever he's back at Rumors, I'm sure.
We also took Kevin to McDonald's after the show.
I don't think I was with you.
He ordered a Royale with cheese.
Did he really?
No.
Oh, did he order a quarter pounder with cheese?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Him and Ezzy were going to town. I obviously was abstaining.
I thought you'd go for the Filet Fish or something.
I want to say that he got one of the limited edition burgers.
What's a limited edition burger?
Like, you know, they have burgers that are only available for a limited time.
Thank you for explaining the word limited.
Between you and your hogs and your pigs and your swine,
as he's going for some, I drive with Ezzy.
Hey, Drew, so I did go to Bovine University.
You really may have. You know, you're gonna go take a burger, rub it on the wall, and if you can see through the wall now, it's good for you to eat the grease test. Ezzy Ginsberg's grease test. Anyways, there's a couple trades and a signing in the NHL this week. Let's start with the bigger of the two: Pearson to Pittsburgh, Hagelin to LA. One for one, a little bit of salary retained is not that important. I like the move from the Penguins' perspective in that you're getting a guy who needed a change of scenery, and I would not be surprised whatsoever if Tanner Pearson finds that goal-scoring prowess that he once had in L.A., had obviously lost, but he can go into a new opportunity and play with a couple of pretty good centers in Crosby and Malkin, potentially.
Right, and I would expect him to play with Evgeny Malkin as opposed to Sidney Crosby and, you know, Jake Guentzel and Dominic Simone have been up there on the top line. Sometimes Patty Hornquist plays on either the first or second line. But, you know, regardless, I mean, you know, Derek Brassard, you know, is the third line center there. So it's possible that, you know, Tanner Pearson plays on that third line. But
Crosby out of the lineup, of course, right now.
Right.
He's going to be out for the rest of about a week or so with, I think, an upper body injury.
He's only going to miss two or three games.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not a concussion, Drew, so that's the most important thing with Crosby's history. But, you know, Tanner Pearson's a guy that we talked about with Cam Robinson during our monthly fantasy segment. I mean, Tanner Pearson was a big part of the Kings team that won the cup in, was it 2015? 2014.
Their most recent cup.
2014, because he wasn't there in 2012, but he was on that 70s line with Tyler Toffoli and Jeff Carter, and he popped in 24 goals 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, you know, Pearson is completely done as a player. He's 26 years old. He's got a lot of hockey. He was a really good player. I want to say he played for the Barrie Colts in the Ontario Hockey League. I know he played in the OHL, but he was a really...
That is correct, the Barrie Colts.
Yeah, he was a really productive junior player. And, you know, this is a guy that I think, you know, they're hoping, obviously, Drew, that he catches lightning in a bottle in Pittsburgh. But they had to do something there. And, you know, we talked about it last week, and you brought it up, and, you know, it turns out you were right about the Penguins possibly making a move. We were thinking that it might be a defenseman. Now, I don't think Jim Rutherford's done. I don't think I'm the only one. I still think that they're going to look, you know, over the next couple of months leading up to the trade deadline, they're going to look at bringing in a defenseman, because I think right now, you know, Jim Rutherford must be looking at that defense and not loving what he sees. And I mentioned it last week. I mean, Chris Letang, you know, he's an all-star defenseman. I think Jamie Oleksiak has really exceeded expectations there. But, you know, after that, I think, you know guys like Chad Ruedel, and I mean, when you get into the kind of depth defenseman there, you know, it kind of thins out a little bit. They really miss Justin Schultz. So I don't think they're done. But when it, you know, going back to the Pearson for Hagelin trade, you know, that's a trade that, you know, I think benefits both teams. Obviously, you know, Hagelin's going to bring some speed. You know, Pittsburgh gets younger, and obviously there's the contracts to factor in as well.
And let's talk about the contracts for a second. Pearson's got 2 years left after this season at $3.75 million.
Yep.
So if he is able to recapture a little bit of scoring
That's a manageable contract.
At 40 points a year, that's a very manageable contract. Hagelin is a pending unrestricted free agent.
Right.
Obviously, the Penguins probably weren't necessarily going to bring him back. He's on the wrong side of 30 now, if I'm not mistaken.
And how much are you going to pay him if you do bring him back?
Right. He hasn't been... I don't think
he's much more than a $2 million a year player.
I think his time was up in Pittsburgh. So what you get from Pittsburgh's perspective, you trade a guy who you really wasn't factoring into your long-term plans for a younger player who you have control over for the next two seasons. And sure, there's a bit of a risk that if he is, you know, struggling for the the rest of this year, then all of a sudden he's on your books, at a decent cap hit, not a prohibitive cap hit, but a decent cap hit. But I think it's an educated guess, and I think it's an educated risk, and I like the move from Pittsburgh's perspective. From LA's perspective, you're going to put Hagelin on your team. It's not going to change your fate this season, and you're going to trade Hagelin at the deadline for a third-round pick or a fourth-round pick, or if he plays well, maybe a second-round pick.
Right, and I mean, it's not a certainty, Drew, but you raise a good point.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a possibility.
And that's an LA team that needs to start acquiring assets. I mean, that's clear, right?
Well, that's right. You need draft picks. That's an LA team. I mean, Hagelin brings them more speed right now, which is important because they're slow as molasses. And, you know, if you like him, then you can sign him. If you don't like him, then you can trade him at the deadline. And like you said, get a draft pick to try and do something to commence the rebuild there, because we know that that roster is just not built to succeed right now.
Well, not only is it not built to succeed, they just they haven't got enough wins here.
Yeah, they're out of it.
It's not even American Thanksgiving yet, and they're out of it.
If you, they average 2 goals a game, which isn't going to win you anything in the NHL nowadays, even with if Jonathan Quick was healthy. But they're now onto their third string goaltender because Quick is out. They have Jack Campbell out of the lineup.
Yep.
So now you're running with Peter Budaj and
Peterson.
Cal Peterson. He got the win last night for the Kings. So, yep. I mean, you're running with a goaltending tandem.
Peter Budaj was injured,
yeah,
but he still backed him up. And I believe Cole Keeler is a guy that might dress the next game. So all types of injuries in goal for the Kings. But what I'm going to be really interested to see, Drew, is how many more moves does Rob Blake make here in the next 2 or 3 months leading up to the trade deadline? Because, I mean, you got to believe that other teams are just circling the Kings right now and calling Rob Blake. And, you know, obviously, you know, Anze Kopitar, Dave, is not going to get traded. Drew Doughty's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
They're not going to trade Jeff Carter. They're not going to trade Ilya Kovalchuk. But you wonder, is Tyler Toffoli available? Is a guy like Alec Martinez available? Jake Muzzin? I mean, they're not going to trade the entire team. But you have to think that there are more trades coming.
Rob Blake knows this team needs a rebuild.
Right, and I'm not saying that, you know, he's going to make 2 trades in the next month. I'm just saying, you know, in between now and the end of February, I think the Kings are going to be a team that is going to make more trades. And, you know, it's obviously, like we talked about, not a team that's going into the playoffs this year.
Yeah, interesting story about Cole Keeler, who you mentioned, Ezzy, was just recalled by the Kings to be their backup goaltender. He's from Altona. And he's an undrafted free agent. So a nice local story there, yep, for a guy who didn't necessarily think he was going to get a shot in the NHL, and he's, yep, sort of gone through the trials and tribulations. He's going to be the backup goaltender for the Kings. So a nice little story there for a local boy from Altona. When we come back, Dave McCarthy is going to join us, talk a little bit about the Leafs, talk a little bit around the NHL. Dave, of course, with SiriusXM NHL Radio. Dave McCarthy up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio as well. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Dave McCarthy. Dave is the Toronto correspondent for NHL.com. You can also hear him on SiriusXM NHL Radio. Dave, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, guys. What's going on? Good to be on with you.
We appreciate your time, Dave, as always. Of course, you cover the Leafs, and good times for the fans in Toronto. The Leafs sweep California, which is always an impressive feat. They did so by beating the Ducks last night by a 2-1 margin. You look all the way up to the top of the NHL standings, and there reside the Toronto Maple Leafs. The question, of course, have the streets been shut down for the parade, or are they going to wait until the Cup is finally awarded?
Yeah, no, nothing like that. But people are happy, obviously, with the way the team has been playing through 20 games of the regular season. I think if someone had have asked you before the season, would you be happy with the Leafs in first place 20 games in? I think a lot of people would have said yes. And I think even more so if you had told them that, you know what, they'll be in that position without Austin Matthews for half of the games and without William Nylander for all of the games, and that Morgan Rielly would be over a point a game, and that John Tavares would be over a point a game, and really living up to the sky-high expectations that came in with him when he signed as a free agent on July the 1st. So there are a lot of good things going on with this Maple Leafs team right now, but as you guys pointed out, let's not get carried away. We haven't even hit American Thanksgiving yet.
You know, Dave, last night Mitch Marner picked up an assist, and he was absolutely red hot on this California road trip. He picked up 5 assists and a goal, 6 points in 3 games. He's on a 4-game point streak. He's up to 6 goals and 26 points on the season in 20 games. He's top 10 in the NHL in scoring right now. I mean, who's happier about this contract right now, Mitch Marner or his agent?
Well, it's a good time to be coming up, isn't it? And I think clearly Mitch Marner's played himself into a position where he's an indispensable player on this team. I honestly believe that he could play the game in a tracksuit, to be honest with you. I don't think he needs equipment. The way he plays the game, it looks like you or I playing against six-year-olds where you're kind of just darting in and out. You're slowing the game down. You've got all kinds of time. You're not trying to play a physical grunt, grind it down game. You just have elite level ability and so much time to put the skill on display. And I think what really has led him to success is that he is so clearly determined the type of game that he needs to play and that he can play to have success. He's undersized. He realizes that, but he doesn't try to play a game above his size, so to speak. He plays a game that slows the play down. He doesn't invite contact. He just uses his elite level skill in order to have success. He doesn't try to beat you in the corners. He's just shifty, and that's really what he is. And I think when you look at him and you look at a guy like Andreas Janssen, for instance, who was really off to a slow start, somewhat disappointing start for the Leafs early on, just kind of come around a little bit. I think Janssen's still trying to find out what type of game he needs to play as an undersized player, and I think he's still playing. He's trying to play a physical game, a straight-ahead power game in an undersized body. I think he's still got to determine that he's got to be a little bit shiftier. Marner's figured that out. He doesn't try to beat you with skills that he doesn't have. He beats you with the skills that he does have, and because of that, he's put himself in a position for a great payday coming up.
Well, Dave, 2 weeks from now is the deadline for William Nylander to sign the contract, potentially, if he wants to play with the Toronto Maple Leafs again this season. So everybody seems to be talking about December 1st as the deadline. But, you know, Pierre LeBrun was out there floating another deadline, February 25th, saying that the Leafs could obviously trade him to a non-playoff team and get some assets back to allow them, you know, to help them in the playoffs this season. Can Toronto handle the saga dragging out till February 25th?
Well, if it passes the December 1st deadline, there is no saga, right? Because sure, the saga would imply that will he come back, won't he come back? After December 1st, he's not coming back. And I talked to Mike Pekka this week for an article that I wrote for the Sporting News up on my Twitter right now. He was the last guy in the National Hockey League to sit out an entire season due to a contractual impasse. He did it with the Buffalo Sabres 2000-2001. Now, he didn't have a hard deadline in season, so he was always hoping that at some point he would be able to get a contract signed and eventually return. Then leading up to the deadline, he told me that I thought maybe I would be able to get moved and could return at that point. So that really was a saga throughout the entire year for the Buffalo Sabres. That's not the case in this situation. He said that if Nylander passes the December 1st deadline, from his standpoint, that's it. He'll never play for the Leafs again. So we'll have to wait and see how that pans out. I saw what Pierre put out, and it's true. That could happen. I don't see why the Maple Leafs would do that, though, because I think the price only goes down at that point. It's either trade him before December 1st to a team that can get him in the lineup this year. I think you'll get more back for him in that standpoint. Otherwise, if you can't sign him by December 1st, then I think ultimately it'll be his decision if he doesn't want to sign the deal, because I don't think the Leafs' price is going up. The Leafs' price is the Leafs' price, and what they're willing to pay is what they're willing to pay. I think it's up to William whether or not he wants to take it or not. So I think it'll ultimately be his decision whether he sits out. But if you don't sign him or trade him by December 1st, if I was Kyle Dubas, I wouldn't trade him until the draft.
Do you want to give a prediction on what's going to happen over the next 2 weeks?
I don't know. I mean, I couldn't say, because I don't know what's going through William Nylander's mind. If all I can say is if I was in his position, I think sitting out an entire season at the point he's at in his career would be foolish. I think for the offer that's on the table, which is not unreasonable. It's not like he wants eight and Leafs are saying, well, here's, you know, three, mm-hmm. right? It's not unreasonable. Reports are they're offering in and around six and a bit, kind of in the David Pastrnak, Nikolaj Ehlers range, which is, I think, the type of player that Nylander is comparable to. So if I was him, I'd eventually take that deal because I think sitting an entire year is foolish because you're still getting a good amount of money. You'll put yourself in a position where with this team, your numbers will be good and you'll set yourself up going forward for a bigger contract, you know, two or three years from now. If you want to take a bridge deal, if that's what it takes, I think that would be the wisest maneuver. That's what Mike Peckett told me as well. He would take a bridge deal. He would look for a bridge deal because then you set yourself up moving forward. But if he wants to sit out the entire year, I mean, for an extra million and a half a year, I guess that's up to him. But to me, that doesn't seem to be a prudent course of action if I was him.
Well, Dave McCarthy is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave is the Toronto Maple Leafs correspondent for NHL.com. You can also hear him on SiriusXM NHL Radio. Dave, you know, you talk about the Leafs and all the talk is about Tavares and it's about Matthews and it's about the offense and Morgan Riley is obviously tearing things up right now. When do we start talking about Freddie Anderson as one of the best goaltenders in the NHL?
Well, I've already started talking about like that. So I guess since last year. Because that's where his numbers have put him. I mean, he started eight games in a row until Garrett Sparks started against Boston Bruins last Saturday. And his save percentage during that eight-game span was over .950. So, you know, what more really needs to be said? The guy is an elite-level netminder in the National Hockey League. He's easily top three. Just simply based on the way this season alone has gone. Name me a guy who's played better. I have a hard time coming up with one. So he is absolutely in that echelon. And I think, quite frankly, he is arguably the most indispensable player on this team. You put it quite rightly. Tavares, Marner, Riley, they've all played great. Matthews got out to a great start, but, you know, as the Leafs are showing, if one of those guys goes down like Matthews has, I think they have enough pieces up front to withstand that for a period of time. If Frederick Anderson were to go down for an extended period of time, I don't know if they have the depth in net to withstand that, because to me, Garrett Sparks still hasn't proven that he can play every day in the National Hockey League and can be the backbone of a team the way Frederick Anderson has been. Freddie's been that good. Garrett still has to prove that. He looked pretty good, Sparks did, against the Ducks yesterday, although the goal that he did let in, despite making 38 to 39 stops, was a goal that, you know, a slap shot off the inside of the blocker and in. It's probably one you'd like to see him stop. And Jake Gardner kind of bailed him out as well on a save that, frankly, should have gone in the net. So that was to me, it was a shakier 38 save performance, if you want to put it that way. Garrett still has something to prove. But Freddie Anderson, to me, has proven that he's one of the top goalies in the league just based on the way his season's gone this year.
Dave, I can't believe it's this far into the interview and we haven't asked you about Auston Matthews. He's back practicing with the Leafs. Of course, he's in the non-contact jersey, but it's been just under 3 weeks since he suffered that shoulder injury. Obviously, you know, Jacob Trouba had a little bit of something to do with that injury. But do you expect Auston Matthews to be back in time for next weekend's back-to-back games?
I don't know that at this point, and I don't think Mike Babcock knows that either. The good thing is the progression has been more or less along the same timeline that he worked with a similar injury to the other shoulder a year ago. The fact that he's back skating with the team yesterday, or I guess it would have been Thursday, I think, one way or another. It was late last week. I wasn't with the team in California, so I don't know exactly offhand, but it was late last week that he skated with the team for the first time. That's a good sign. Now it's about getting him into a practice, and we'll get a better understanding tomorrow when the Leafs practice on Sunday back at home in Toronto, the extent to which he participates, if he takes part in drills, if he takes contact. That'll give us a good indication. If that's the case, a good chance he might be back by next weekend. But we'll only know that once he gets into a few practices and starts to test himself in terms of contact in drills. If that's the case, looking good. If we get into Wednesday, Thursday, and he hasn't really done that yet, then I would think the opportunity is more likely. But initially they did say would be a month, and next Saturday would be a month. So all things considered, I think you would have to be pleased with the timetable. I don't think there's been a setback, and everything looks like it's progressing as they expected that it would.
And Dave, we should mention the Leafs play the Blue Jackets at home on Monday, then they've got Carolina on the road. Those back-to-back games next weekend are on Friday against Columbus in Columbus and then Philadelphia on Saturday. So as you mentioned, the thinking was if everything goes well in practice, Austin Matthews could be back as early as that home game against the Flyers.
Yeah, that's possible. I think that would be the logical target. I don't think it would make sense, given where the Leafs are in the standings right now, to jam them into a back-to-back. I think if everything progresses well, he gets a couple practices under his belt. You know, if you're the Leafs, hopefully Saturday is that target. But again, we'll have to wait and see how he progresses through practice this week.
Dave McCarthy covers the Leafs for NHL.com. Dave, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
No problem, guys. Good to be on with you.
Take care. When we come back, we have one final segment. More drama surrounding the Ottawa Senators and injuries galore this week in the NHL. One final segment to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Brought right back in. Turris for Smith, and his shot blocked by a diving Fowler, and that came up and hit him in the face.
Boy, he went to block the shot, and that puck went right off the shaft of the stick or the blade
he
of the stick.
Shaken up.
There's just nothing you can do as a player. You do the right thing. You lead with the stick to go to block the shot, and unfortunately, it takes a funny bounce off the shaft of the stick.
You hate to see what happened to Cam Fowler earlier this week. He's out of the Ducks lineup indefinitely with a fractured face. One of those injuries you never like to report on because you just know it's a bad situation anytime they're talking about a fractured face. So he's going to be out of the Ducks lineup indefinitely. Quality defenseman who's going to be out. I don't think I've seen a week lately or of recent memory with this many injuries in and around the NHL. And not just, you know, minor players getting injured, and all due respect to those minor players, but you have Zdeno Chara, he's out 4 to 6 weeks. Andrei Vasilevsky, he's out 3 to 4 weeks. Tobias Reeder of the Oilers, he's out for a month. Victor Arvidsson, 6 to 8 weeks. Cam Fowler with the fractured face. John Klingberg, he's out 5 to 6 weeks. It's just, I mean, Dmitry Kulikov, we talked about last week, he's going to be out of the Jets lineup for a month. It's just one of those weeks where it's just so many injuries happening all at the same time. A bizarre scenario in and around the NHL this week, guys.
And Nico Hischier
is another guy. New Jersey Devils, yeah.
Right,
sorry.
It looks like, you know, he's going to miss at least a couple of games. Trevor Lewis fractured his foot in practice.
Yeah, took a shot off his foot. He's out of the Kings lineup. You know, Sidney Crosby, I mean, that's only about a week he's expected to be out.
Jack Campbell after Jonathan Quick.
It was just one of those bizarre, was it a full moon this week or something that, you know, it's something like, something must have been in the water that caused NHL players to go down like flies this week.
Well, and think about the players we're talking about. Sidney Crosby, Zdeno Chara, Cam Fowler, Nico Hischier.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these aren't depth players. These are top players for their teams. And obviously, you know, Crosby's only going to miss two or three games. And obviously, you know, we talk about some of these other players. Victor Arvidsson.
Yeah.
I mean, Victor Arvidsson being out for 6 to 8 weeks for me is huge. Also, P.K. Subban didn't play the last Predators
he's
game.
On IR he's right IR. Now for the
right.
for the Predators.
So Subban and Arvidsson, I mean, those are top players for the Predators. To me, those are the Arvidsson injury is almost as significant as any other of these injuries.
Yeah, well, he's a top-line player for the Predators, and he's going to be out for not just, you know, a brief spurt, but he's going to be out for the next 6 to 8 weeks, which is significant.
And what these injuries do is they test your depth, and they show how deep your organization is and whether you can handle it. And you know what? The truth is, especially for a lot of these teams that are already doing okay in terms of, like you know, Dave McCarthy was talking about the Leafs and how they've survived without Austin Matthews, it's not a bad thing because it's giving younger players an opportunity or whomever number to step into your lineup, play, and allow your team to understand your organizational depth and see how these guys are able to handle the pressure.
I don't expect
for when you're, you know, later on pushing in the playoffs and you potentially need players, it's always good to have this knowledge base.
I don't expect the Lightning to crater now that they're going to be without Andre Vasilevsky because they have too much talent otherwise. But a team like the Arizona Coyotes, they just lost Jason Demers for the rest of the season, and he's a key defenseman on their team, and they don't have the player who can step into their lineup. I mean, we saw it last year. Remember, the Canucks got off to a decent start last year, and then I think it was Brock Besser who went out of the lineup for the majority of the season for the Canucks, and then they started to plummet.
Brock Besser got injured towards the end of last year.
Then was it Bo Horvat who went out?
Remember the door opened up.
Yeah.
And I don't know if mentioned that.
Maybe I'm thinking Bo Horvat earlier on in the season got injured. I don't remember exactly who it was.
I feel like Besser missed the final 20 games of the
season.
Whatever it was.
Some of those teams that are young and don't have the depth, when they get an injury, a key injury like that, they lose out, and that's sort of the beginning of the end of their success that they may have had at the start of the season.
Well, right, and you know, when you're talking about some of these injuries, you know, we mentioned Victor Arvidsson's going to be out for a couple of months, and P.K. Subban I don't think is going to be out that long. He might just miss one or two more games, but these teams have depth. When you're talking about the L.A. Kings... Mm-hmm. And obviously, they're the worst team in the league right now. But when you lose not only Jonathan Quick, but then you lose Jack Campbell, and then now Peter Budaj, who's also been struggling with some injury problems, he's now your number one goaltender. And then Cal Peterson's never played any NHL games. It's not just the injuries. It's the fact that the team's already struggling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you need...
When it rains, it pours.
Exactly. You need a guy like Jonathan Quick to at least, you know... Limit the bleeding, right?
Yeah, when you can't score, you need to have a damn good goaltender in your net, and that's the problem right now that the LA Kings have. Quickly, the Ottawa Senators, another black eye for the Senators organization, allegedly. There's an Ottawa Citizen report about a Twitter account or a number of Twitter accounts, upwards of 20 Twitter accounts who are all tweeting the same thing. They all appear to be fake Twitter accounts, all tweeting the same thing, going after the media in Ottawa for reporting on the Uber story and then praising Eugene Melnyk and, you know, his ownership and the way the team has handled the Uber story. Want to make it clear, we have no idea who these Twitter accounts are linked to, but they are all fake and they're all tweeting the same thing. So
it's obviously Brian Colangelo.
Very suspicious. I mean, the Ottawa Senators are the gift that keeps on giving for talk radio.
Andrew, it's crazy. The whole point is these guys can't get out in front of themselves. I mean, the fact of the matter is, we talked about it last week, we pilloried them the last week, and the reality was, you thought, okay, they're done. And now, a week later, they're back in the news.
Every Friday.
I mean, it's good for a show, for three guys who have a show on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
But it boggles the mind that these guys continue to do these things.
You know, Dave, Drew mentioned it's the gift that keeps on giving, but it's the gift that nobody wants. It's like an old pair of socks.
Yeah, you're
like,
right.
Like, I just feel bad. We talked about it last week, right, with the whole situation with Ken Warren not being allowed to board the team charter. Like, Senators fans have experienced enough.
Yeah.
Like, when is this going to end?
Well, it's going to end when... And again, we have no idea who is behind these Twitter accounts, but it's the constant embarrassing story linked to the team you're trying to support. And this isn't necessarily the Senators organization's fault, but it's just one after the other after the other. We've now got, what, three or four consecutive weeks?
Yes.
Where we've talked about the Ottawa Senators in a negative light. And frankly, we shouldn't be talking about the Ottawa Senators that much at all, because they're not really a relevant team this year. They're just sort of going through the motions. You talk about them when it gets closer to the trade deadline and Matt Duchene and his status becomes more clear. But to talk about the same team for three or four straight weeks because of embarrassing off-ice matters doesn't say a lot for how they're being run right now and how the organization is handling things.
And by the way, you know, if you haven't read this article, there's some very bizarre tweets commenting about, you know, overweight reporters and, you know, some Twitter account that the name is Mariah Smith saying that if you mess with our team, you mess with us. Just really bizarre type of tweets coming out from these accounts.
Read it. It's on the Ottawa Citizen website. It's a fantastic article, and you're just going to shake your head at the end of it all. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. Big thank you to our guests, Dave McCarthy of NHL.com, Patrick Johnston of Post Media covering the Canucks, Cam Robinson talking fantasy hockey, he's with Dauber Hockey, Murat Atesh of The Athletic, and back in the first hour, Kristen Anderson covering the Calgary Flames for Post Media. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on our website, IllegalCurve.com, also available on TSN1290.ca. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Get it sent to you automatically each and every week. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Big props to Sean Asor doing a great job behind the board.
Shawnee.
For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.